It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
And we're on. It's pretty freaky, huh?
Yeah, it's nice.
Isn't it?
I forgot to ask what episode it was.
Oh, we're going to be in so much trouble.
The brother-in-law is back in town, going to stay with us for a while, and so I forgot.
Oh, really? Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's very nice. He's really nice.
They do this a lot now just because they can.
Lay on the floor.
They're still kind of amazed. And they have a toy box now. Trish ordered it. And you'll see over on that bench over there, there's a bunch of stuff that's eventually going to be a small basket with hooks for our keys and my wallet and stuff right by the door.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a good setup. Anyway. Okay. I don't know if this is coming through or not. Are you guys hearing me? I don't know. Try stuff in yours.
Hello, it's me, William. I'm in your left ear.
I think the right ear. All right, I think we're good. This is basically how it always looks. And I did switch it so that we have the correct mics. So
okay,
you have your mic even though you're on the other side and in a different chair.
That's right, I am.
So hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast. The only podcast in the world that is the arch nemesis of the mundane Silence Shoes podcast. And they know why.
Is that a real podcast?
Seriously?
I don't know.
So many ways in which you should not ask that.
Because
you know me. Because nobody would make the Mundane Silence Shoes podcast. Because first of all, it's dumb to make the Magical Talking Hat podcast. But it's even more dumb to make the Mundane Silence Shoes podcast.
I was just asking.
Also, just a phenomenal... after all of that aside, assuming I'm an honest person and that's not a terrible, terrible idea.
Yeah, I'm just
the odds that we would have that opposing podcast are just amazing.
Just asking because that's a cool name and I could use that for my next podcast.
Well, way to blow the idea that this is our arch nemesis and we already know and hate them. Because clearly you've never even heard of them. So,
no.
Wah, wah, all you who believed that. But wait, you didn't. This is why we can't have nice things. Anyway, I'm Tony.
And I'm William. And I think this is episode 235.
I believe you are correct also. If we're wrong, too bad. It'll be right on the blog. It'll be right on the file.
Yeah.
But if we say it wrong, so what?
We say a lot of things wrong.
So
I do anyway.
Many things. He's still breathing, so I can tell he's moving. But wow, he's zonked. Except for his little tail twitch. For those of you just joining us for the first time, that's weird. Welcome. We are a ragtag group at this point. Small but loyal. Half dozen or so listeners after 4+ years. Here's how it works. We have a hat. It's magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Once again, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. People, write into the hat. Write into the hat's email address, specifically, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And, oh, crap. We'll see if that helps things. I don't know if it will or not. But for some reason we had the phantom power on our mixer.
Oh.
Which you don't want for these kind of mics.
Okay.
Anyway, people write in to that email address with little notes, little comments, topics, questions, things like that. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those little note cards, little emails into note cards that manifest within the hat. It's the hat on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. We, alright, we're pausing for a musical interlude here, I guess.
By Tracy Chapman.
By Tracy Chapman.
William, how do you like our new house?
Yeah, there's a lot of space.
I know, right?
Isn't it?
You should try being like, the kitties and just flop on the floor. I hear it's a lot of fun.
I've done it. It's nice. anyway, we draw the note cards out at random, talk about them, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour, that's the whole show.
Except things like this happen, where we get interrupted by...
By the producer bringing us
producer
supper.
Producer, or by the pizza guy knocking on the door.
Yeah, we didn't order pizza tonight.
Tony's
we got Panera.
Tony's continual need to eat is just
my
such an obstacle.
Continual need to eat, constantly.
You need to work on that.
Oh my gosh, did you tell William about our homeopathy idea?
What is it?
It's terrible.
It's going to take a while to explain.
Yeah, and we got so much else we got to explain
all
tonight.
Right.
So. And it's also kind of gross.
Okay. Tell him about it off air, though.
we'll see. I'm mostly concerned for him, not for the hatlings. The hatlings can handle gross. William blanches at the sight of, well, a variety of fluids.
What? There's a cookie in here I didn't even order.
Really?
Really?
You really didn't order the cookie?
I really didn't order the cookie.
Uh-huh.
No, seriously, I'll show you the receipt.
No, I trust you, baby.
That's not what your eyebrows are saying.
The guy.
My eyebrows aren't the boss of me.
Oh my god, in our new clean house, I can smooch you on the air.
That just happened on the air.
Yeah.
First time in how many episodes?
I think we have to up our listener rating.
Wait, what's this? Here, I got a fig.
I think now it's mature now.
I got a fig.
I thought it was sour grapes.
No, that was your idea. That's not... That's terrible.
A cookie you didn't order. The person helping you must have thought you were cute.
Apparently.
I know. Do you like how I just assume it's for me?
Well, yeah.
Well, you were there.
I worked out my points. Yeah. No, the funny thing is nobody would have seen her. She ordered it online. They put it on a shelf. She came and
got
it.
Yeah, they put it in the bag.
So they thought her online order was cute.
Yeah, if any hatlings are introverted, it's like the best thing
yeah.
ever.
Yeah, if you have a Panera Bread near you, get the app on like your phone. You can order online, pay online, and then it's really cool if you don't want to deal with people. But more importantly, it's cool because Panera is fucking busy a lot. And you can go in and there's just a shelf with bags and they'll have your order name and number on it and you just take it. So do that. It's awesome. Anyway, how have your 2 weeks been?
Good, I guess. I did the sleep study,
the second one?
They moved it up.
With the CPAP. Tell me about that. How'd that go?
It was horrible.
Oh?
Yeah.
Worse than the first time?
Well, I didn't do CPAP the first time.
No, but the CPAP, with the CPAP was worse than the sleep study the first
time. Yeah, yeah. Although, I can't blame my poor sleep on the machine. I just have nights. I think even if I hadn't had the machine, I probably would have had
a bad night.
Yeah, I probably would have had a bad night anyway. But the machine made it, for me personally, more unbearable.
It takes a lot of getting used to for a lot of people.
For me, they started with just the nose mask.
Okay.
And I didn't have any problems with that because what usually happens is a person falls asleep and then their mouth, the jaw will slack and then that didn't happen. I did fall asleep for a little while and I didn't have a problem with my jaw or whatever. But I did wake up shortly after falling asleep and I wouldn't go back to sleep. So they thought, well, maybe we should try the full mask and see if you'll fall asleep and stay asleep. Once again, I did fall asleep, but I didn't stay asleep. And it was worse because with the full mask on my face, I just felt like I was suffocating, which is weird because you're not. I mean, there's plenty of air going in.
No, quite the opposite.
Yeah. What made me feel like that, though, was when you breathe out, which you can also do quite easily, is, you know, your exhale isn't being, like, pushed back into your face or something. But the temperature, the air temperature in the mask would go up a little bit when I breathed out, tricking my brain into thinking that when I was breathing out, it wasn't going anywhere.
Yes.
And so it made me feel
did
like
they
I was
have
suffocating.
The vapor? Was the water vapor going?
I don't know.
They generally have levels that put water in it, and it gives you basically a fine mist to help keep you not dried out. That is tied directly to how heated it is.
Well,
and so that can also make it feel warmer. Did we reach any conclusions? Are we just like,
I don't know,
fuck CPAPs, or are we waiting for them to find out?
It was just two nights ago, so
okay, so they'll get back to you.
But I hated it. I mean, I left feeling pretty sour on the whole thing. Although I'll say this, the one they just put on my nose, while that was probably the most unpleasant one in terms of, like, when I was using just the nose, when it there was almost immediate pain around where that was making contact with my skin, which I didn't like. But I did fall asleep relatively soon after that. I just woke up and couldn't go back to sleep, which I'm not sure was the mask's fault.
Well, and keep in mind, there are a variety of different masks, including ones, they don't call them masks, they call them pillows.
Yeah, they go right in your nostril.
Just like one nostril or whatever.
Yeah.
And also, they all have to be, you know, individually, like, tightness. So if it hurt, it may have just been because it was too tight.
Maybe. The full mouth one, you know, nose and mouth,
which is what I have,
was more uncomfortable in terms of making me feel panicked and whatever. But shortly after they put it on, it felt like it wasn't there at all. I don't know why that was different. Maybe it was put on properly or something. I don't know. And I did fall asleep for a little while, or at least the guy told me I did. But then when I woke up, I didn't go back to sleep and just felt panicked that whole time for like several hours. So, I mean, psychologically, it didn't leave a very good impression. Plus, I didn't move around. I didn't, like, sleep on my side or anything.
Yeah.
I wasn't aware that I could even do that. Because when I tried to move with the nose one on, it seemed like it was tugging and leaking and stuff. And so I thought, oh, well, I guess I have to stay on my back. So that was probably another problem, is I probably needed to roll around or roll over or something, and I couldn't do it.
Well, that's the thing. They tell you, you can't do that. You have to lay on your back with the CPAP.
Okay.
But I did it anyway, because you know what? It's not how I sleep. And I'm not suddenly going to learn to sleep on my back all night unmoving. So I was like, we're going to get readings on what this is like when I sleep the way I sleep. Otherwise, there's no point. It's telling us nothing. Because when I go home, I'm not going to be sleeping through the night on my back unmoving.
Right.
Like that. I wouldn't even know how to start to train myself to do that, but it would be tough.
Well, apparently,
which is part of why I can't have a little one, like a pillow or things like that. Because the pillows, especially, if you turn, there's a really good chance you can, like, yank it out or whatever.
Oh.
So.
Well, apparently, I can't just stay on my back either. I gotta get on one side or the other, and probably alternating or something.
I move a lot at night, yeah.
Yeah, I do too. So, so it was just a really unpleasant experience all around, and I didn't get very much sleep that night at all. And the technician was concerned about how little sleep I got. Although I told him, I said, I have nights like this fairly frequently. Not every night, but, you know, probably every other week I'll have one night like this without the CPAP machine giving me fits. But
for a lot of people, it takes a lot of work. Like, I was very lucky in that I was suddenly like, oh my God, this is amazing.
Well,
but for most people, which is why so many people get one prescribed, get it home, use it for like 3 nights, and then put it in their closet and never touch it again. Which is part of the deal now. If you want insurance to pay for it, it has a little card in it initially that records how much it's used and stuff like that. And after a few weeks, you have to send them back the card, and it has to prove that you actually used it for the insurance to agree to pay for it.
Yeah, I mean, if they were to ask me, do you want to use this, I would say, no, I don't think it's for me, but they might recommend it anyway. And if they do, I will use it. And I imagine I can get used to it eventually. But, I mean, I would like to get some rest. I mean,
that would be nice.
I hate being tired all the time, but, you know, maybe that's just, I've been like this for so long, maybe I just need to shut up and accept it as my new normal or something.
Well, I mean, let yourself get used to it, but also I'm betting there are more factors than just
sleep apnea. I'm wondering if I'm going to talk to my general practitioner about maybe getting a referral to like a psychiatrist or something to see if there's any tests they can run or whatever to see if I'm experiencing more than the normal amount of anxiety or stress or something and possibly find out treatment methods on that. Here's the thing about that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a bad thing for me even to bring up on the podcast, but the couple times I've brought it up to healthcare professionals, they sort of push it off kind of you don't need to worry about seeing a psychiatrist or something, as if I just said, well, I might be insane, so maybe I should see a psychiatrist. I don't think I'm crazy. I'm just open to the idea that maybe there are psychological or emotional factors here
that need to be taken into account. It's very common nowadays.
Well, but I think the stigma, the mental health stigma is so pervasive that even general practitioners and people in the healthcare profession that are outside of psychiatry, you know, feel like, well, you don't need to see a psychiatrist unless you're like really troubled or you're crazy or something. Well, I'm not either of those things, but I might be losing sleep because of stress. And see, here's the thing about me. I think we've talked about this before is, when I have a lot of stressful things happen in my life or a lot of anxious things, I don't act out the way some people might do. In fact, sometimes I just get sick with a psychosomatic disease. The first time that happened, it was hives. Maybe I've talked about it on the podcast. I got these hives. I went in, they're all over and very uncomfortable. And I went in and they couldn't find any cause for it. And then they asked me a series of questions about some things that had happened in my life. And I think I had a close relative pass away in the previous 9 months. I'd switched jobs in the previous 9 months and I'd moved in the previous 9 months. And I didn't think anything of it. And nobody who knew me at that time would think I was under a lot of stress or anxiety because I don't behave like that.
And you internalize a lot.
That's right. And so I didn't realize I was stressed out. No, none of my friends realized I was stressed out, but my body sure as heck knew I was stressed out because it gave me hives.
And then there was that time you thought you had feline leukemia.
No, there was one other time where I had an illness. I went in, there was no illness. I mean, there were symptoms, like real symptoms, like hives or something like that. Mm-hmm. I wasn't going in with a fake complaint or something. And they realized, oh, you just have, it's just, this is a stress-related response. So for me, especially, you know, I might need to see someone who could ask me the questions, well, has this happened? Has that happened? How did you feel about that? To help me realize myself, oh, I'm just undergoing a lot of stress. And I need to maybe do some mitigating things so that I can feel better and get more sleep.
Maybe approach them and don't use the word psychiatrist. Use the phrase mental health professional.
Maybe.
Because I think there may be some, I don't want to say stigma, but I think a psychiatrist at this point, because it's much less common to see a psychiatrist nowadays. I get my meds from my GP. I go see therapists who are social workers or psychologists and things like that. And psychiatrists also, I think, are the ones that bring in the big bucks at the same time. And so there could be something like that.
Why didn't
they're just like, whoa, 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 you're not in psychiatrist territory. Which is super dumb, but...
Well, I didn't know. I just thought that's what a general practitioner would refer me to, a psychiatrist. I figured that's why I keep saying that, because I don't want to go shopping for a social worker or a psychologist if my GP can refer me
to
a psychiatrist that they know and respect.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the whole point of getting a referral.
Yeah. I think it'll work if you couch it more, or even just say psychiatrist or psychologist or whatever.
Oh.
Or just say, you know, mental health professional, that kind of thing. Which I may be wrong, but I just know that's a possibility, because for some people that, again, because it takes more schooling and they generally charge more and stuff like that. So I think there's like that thing.
Well, I mean, psychiatry, I'm not looking for medication. That's another thing. Because one thing they might be responding to is me suggesting, well, I should go talk to someone who will give me a pill to fix all my problems, which that's not it at all. In fact,
And if you wanted that, you wouldn't need a referral. I get mine from my GP.
Yeah, I don't really want medicine, but the psychiatrists are trained in psychotherapy, so.
Yep, absolutely.
So that, and that's fine. So, you know, that's the way I'm thinking about it. But, you know, I've always thought about mental health as just like anything else anyway, you know. To me, when someone says, oh, I talked to my psychiatrist about such and such, or they talk to me about a psychological or a mental health diagnosis, it's, to me, I don't respond to it any different than if they said there was something wrong with their heart or something wrong with their leg. But I understand most people, I guess, aren't like that. Yeah. That if you say you have a mental problem, they respond very differently than if you say you've got something wrong with your heart.
Oh, absolutely.
I was talking to my brother-in-law about this today, and he kind of helped me reach an insight about this, which is when someone says, well, I've got a heart problem, that doesn't, to them, present any kind of threat. It's, in fact, the opposite. Oh, yeah. Like, this person's not going to harm me. They have a heart problem. But when you suggest you have a mental problem, or you say you have a mental diagnosis that maybe they don't know what it means, that presents a threat in that, okay, well, this person might go crazy and rip my face off, which is irrational and crazy for them to think that, because that's
absolutely.
The odds that that's true. Or, I mean, the people that do that are not depressed people or bipolar people or whatever. Those are psychotic people, and there aren't very many people like that. And the person who just told you they have a health problem could be psychotic too. You don't know that. But for the most part, when someone tells you they've had some kind of diagnosis, mental diagnosis, it's no different than if they told you they broke their leg. I mean,
no, but there people look at it as dehumanizing, and that's the thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Somebody with a physical ailment is just a dude in a cast. Somebody with a mental ailment is a crazy.
Yeah. Well, and a threat. I think there's something threatening about it.
And it's socially threatening.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we're all familiar to a degree. I mean, there's, don't get me wrong, there's a lot of people make a lot of terrible assumptions about people with physical ailments as well.
Yeah, that's true.
And frequently pay too much attention or ignore too much or just get misconstrued.
Sure, sure.
But it's a relatable, physical, visible thing. You know, it's, oh, okay, that's wrong. Or, oh, your heart. I know what your heart is, and it's not as strong, or you take medicine for whatever.
And you can, there's a strong empathizing element where you can empathize even though you've never experienced it.
I understand the limits. If I'm going to spend a wonderful Saturday with my quadriplegic friend, we're probably not going to go ziplining.
Yeah.
And I get that. I understand what the limitations are.
Right.
With a mental thing, there are social complications to all sorts of unspoken and in some cases unacknowledged social rules and cues, any combination of which you may or may not get or you may react differently to. And honestly, I'm doing it all on reflex. I don't know all the social cues I'm taking on or all the proper responses to things that I'm doing that I'm just assuming you're going to do because you're a normal, sane person. But you tell me you have a mental problem, holy shit, I might talk about your shoelaces and then you want to punch me. Or I might mention what I had for breakfast and you refer it to how you're attracted to my mom. Like, it could get really weird, you know? That's the assumption, which is dumb.
Yeah.
But dumb, but in a certain way understandable, because, like I said, I think it's in an area, breaking the social cues is something much more esoteric and makes people much more nervous, because it's not as clearly defined.
Yeah, I suppose. It gets back to that whole weird thing that I see this, it seems like I'm noticing this in lots of things in interviews I see with people, or people make comments, or in movies, characters say this all the time. People always fear the unknown, which, of course, is wrong. That's not true at all. But we do live in a culture where people do, if there's something they don't feel like they understand,
they often want to avoid.
Yeah, they can freak out about it. And you know what's interesting? Hardly anyone ever talks about when people think they understand something that they don't.
Because
you were just sort of alluding to that a little bit, how people think they totally understand someone with a heart problem, but they don't, and so they're saying all the wrong stuff and doing all the wrong things.
Or how 95% of people who think they understand what autism is totally don't understand what autism is, including me. Well, okay, I guess I don't count, because I know I don't understand entirely what autism is. Well, I'm getting better.
So yeah, it's, I don't know. But for me personally, I'm perfectly willing to admit that I might have some kind of issues there blocking my capability of,
I've been campaigning for you to get help for ages.
Seriously,
because I got to hang out with you and you freak me out.
And
because I think you might be a crazy.
And in the last 10 years or so, I have experienced a number of traumatic events that have probably stayed with me in ways that previous events didn't. My mom passing, I don't know if I coped with that very well. That was 9 years ago now, but maybe I've got some issues I need to talk about with that. I don't know. And previous to my mom passing away, I hadn't experienced anything quite like that before. I was a virtual stepfather to 3 kids, and then a lot of things happened with that, had an impact on me emotionally and psychologically. What's left of that, I don't know. And it would be wrong for me to think I do, and it would be wrong for me to think that anyone I know knows. That's another thing. That's one of the reasons you talk to a professional is because not only are you too close to it to really know what's going on, but a lot of times your closest friends and family are too close to really know what's going on.
And even if you assume objectivity, my credentials are a bachelor's in cultural anthropology. Even if somehow I'm objective about you, which I'm super not, I have no fucking clue. Why would I,
Well, you are fairly representative for the friends that I have in terms of being very insightful, very smart, very broad-minded, and as objective as a person probably can be in a particular situation. But also, we're very close, and we care about each other a lot, and, that makes a blind spot that's understandable and desirable even. So, it might be good for me to get the opinion of someone who doesn't know me already, and also who has a background in treating this kind of thing in other people, so they can see patterns that a non-professional wouldn't be able to see.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's just no reason.
Well, and if your friends really are all like me, then they're all smart enough to know that they're not going to help diagnose and or treat any psychological issues you might have.
That's right. So for me, it's just a natural thing after going through all of these tests and seeing all these doctors that I've been doing lately, when I'm not getting answers or I'm not satisfied with the answers, to go, well, gee, maybe I need to see a psychiatrist. To me, it's the most natural thing in the world to say that. But when I say it out loud, I get a broad range of odd responses that indicate, well, what are you, go see a psychiatrist? What's wrong with you?
I can't shake the feeling that I think psychiatrist is the set of word. Either that or you've just had shitty medical professionals.
Well, I mean, it's not like they're...
I mean, I've gone through this many times, there's been no problem. And I'm still of the belief, I've always been of the belief, and I hold very strongly to it, that barring a crappy therapist, which are things that exist...
Yeah, yeah.
It never hurts.
Well, exactly.
To go to a mental health professional.
That's what I'm thinking. It's like what...
Nothing bad comes out of it unless they're really bad. And I've had some really bad ones who may have done me a little bit of harm. But those are rare, and also you figure that out.
And then you go somewhere else.
But barring that, it's sort of like saying, barring a mechanic who will, blow up your car, it never hurts to go have it checked out by a mechanic.
No, right.
That's nothing... Worst case scenario, it's going to be like, oh, all right. Well, I'm fine then. All right. We're done.
Yeah.
I had a therapist I went to for a long time, and I eventually realized that I should stop, because I had hit the point where it was essentially this podcast, but I was paying him a lot. And I'm like, I feel like I'm getting a lot out of this because he's listening to me talk, but we've really processed through the reasons I came here, and as cool as this is, I'm not sure it's worth the hourly rate.
Yeah.
I should go.
Well, anyway, I won't see my general practitioner until the end of the month, because I wasn't even supposed to have the sleep study for another couple weeks. But I'll ask him about it, and I'll try to help him understand that when I say it might be good to talk to a psychiatrist, I'm not telling you that I think I'm crazy. I'm telling you that maybe stress and anxiety, depression even, are interacting and causing some of these problems, and that I should just talk to someone to see if that might be a possibility. That's all. I don't want to... I'm not saying I should get fitted for a straitjacket.
No, I feel
just...
Well, again, nowadays, you can't swing a dead cat without hitting somebody who's in therapy. We're all in therapy, and that's fine.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. And a whole bunch of us are on SSRIs, I mean...
Well, and that's another thing. I don't want someone to think I'm saying I need pills. I'm not saying that either. I'm just saying maybe someone who knows something about this could say, yeah, you're kind of stressed out. Maybe we can help you do some relaxation exercises.
I think the responses you got earlier are either from stupid people or somehow tripped up over the word psychiatrist. Because what you're describing to me is not only makes total sense and seems very simple, I think of it as very common and something I have done multiple times. And I mean,
I don't think they're stupid. I think they thought I was saying something that I wasn't saying. Like, that I was suggesting I might be crazy or something, which I don't think I'm crazy, but people have problems. I have problems just like everybody else. And sometimes you need a little help. Just like sometimes you need to go to a doctor for a physical ailment.
But here's the deal.
What's the difference?
So somebody comes and says, I might have some mental stuff that I need to deal with. Maybe I should talk to a mental health professional. And I say, okay, let me refer you to a therapist or to this clinic or whatever. Instead, a person comes to me and says, I think I might be crazy. I say, no, go home, you're fine. So I'd like to go back to my stupid.
Well, no.
What the hell?
I don't think, I get what you're saying, but no. I think they didn't think I knew what I was talking about. And maybe I don't know. But
you know who could help you figure that out? A therapist.
But,
is
there an insurance thing? Like, does insurance not usually cover mental health consultations?
A lot of places do sliding scale fees also, but I had some of mine covered by it. It varies.
Well, I don't know. I'll look into stuff like that. And like I said, I'll say something to my GP about it and we'll see what he says.
And
who I like, my general practitioner is awesome. He's great.
Even if your GP's not into it. You can do it on your own. I mean, that's
well,
thing,
I know, but I don't. You
know, no, I absolutely think consulting with your GP is the right thing to do. I'm just saying, once again, I think those earlier people were stupid, and if for some crazy reason your GP is stupid in the same way,
well, you know,
we can still.
That's true. That's true. Mental.
But I think it is unlikely that this will happen, because the only way I can rationalize it other than stupid. Which it sounds like your GP is not stupid.
No.
Is, again, being hung up on that word. So if you don't go that route, or just explain it in more detail.
I think.
I mean, what you're suggesting is perfectly reasonable and not only weird or unnecessary, but not all that uncommon, not all that notable. I mean, people do this all the time.
But there's a huge some kind of social thing out there about mental health treatment and seeking mental health treatment.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I just don't understand why people.
You're in
like
Iowa
that.
City, though, so.
Oh, yeah, I guess. Oh, I'll figure it out. Right. We've taken up so much time. You probably had a lot to talk about with your 2 weeks. Because, you were gone and everything.
But that's okay. Most of us can talk about this.
Yeah, that's nice what your neighbor did. But yeah, you were in Oregon
I was in Oregon and Washington a little bit.
Yeah.
Visited my family. Went pretty well, all things considered. Was a good time. We rented a car. We rented like a compact or something small, because that's what we drive. And the guy says, so you were down for combat here. We have a whole bunch of SUVs. Would you be okay just taking one of those? And we were like, sure. We'll try it out. It's a rental car. Who cares if it's not going to cost us any money? So we drove the week in a Nissan Rogue.
Yeah? How was it?
Not bad at all. It's a little weird, but I don't think it was, because it's a very small SUV.
Oh.
So I think there were some issues with the size and just being used to it, but I don't think they're any different than like when I drive the Pontiac. I'm used to a compact car, and when it's not compact, it's a little weird. But it was a really nice car. It had a thing where we could plug in the iPod and listen to stuff off of there.
Yeah.
All sorts of bells and whistles. Just has a thing that tells you exactly how many miles you have left in your gas tank. it was pretty cool. I liked it. If we were ever to find some reason why we would need something like that, I might consider a Nissan Rogue. And of course, the funny thing, the reason you drive a compact car over something like that is better gas mileage.
Yeah.
Guarantee you this thing gets better mileage than either of the two cars in my driveway right now. Guarantee it. Now there's the whole factor of, you know, the cost, like the, what is it they say, the cost, the environmental impact of making a new Prius versus taking a car that already exists that's a gas guzzler and just driving it into the ground and all that jazz. So, like, I'm not going to ditch my cars and go do that, but...
The Nissan Rogue?
Nissan Rogue, or as I like to call it, the Nissan Rouge.
And the check from Nissan will be arriving when...
There you go.
Now that we've talked about it on the podcast. It was nice.
And yeah, so we hung out there and that was pretty cool. Got to see my family a lot. Got to see my niece a lot. I blew a glass float. Like, so in Oregon, it used to be a thing. In Japan, they had fishing floats that were glass balls.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And they would wash up on shore. All the way over on the northwest coast. And this happened for many years. Now, less common, and also everybody knows about them. So they kind of, it's rare to see a real one anymore. So glassblowers started making basically fake ones as decor and stuff like that. But now, the thing is, you can make your own.
No kidding.
And there's this place, and when we had gone last year, maybe the year before, Trish and my mom had made them. Because they saw this was a thing. And Trish loves glass blowing. And she's like, you can do it yourself. So they did it that time. And then my mom has gone back many times since. And you don't... It's not just a float. You can also make a paperweight. You can make a starfish. You can make... I forget what else. There's a bunch of stuff. And she's made, like, everything. but so I was like, this time I wanted it. So I made a glass float that should be being shipped to me as we speak from Oregon. Because you can't... We did it, like, the last day we were out there. And it's not... cool yet, so couldn't take it at that time, but should show up before too long, and hopefully it'll be awesome.
Was that fun?
It was kind of cool.
Yeah,
but it was also very hot, which is part of the thing. There were a couple things that were hard for that, but no, it was pretty neat.
Do you have to blow it like really with a lot of pressure, or I mean, is it just a light?
Slow but steady was the big thing. That he told me, and so I worked really hard on doing that. And I mean, between vocal exercises and some stuff in PT and stuff like that, when I want to, I can have pretty good breath control, and so it wasn't too tricky for me. But also, you know, once it cools and things like that, I saw the finished product as it was, but it's not going to look the same. Like, the colors will be different by the time they get here, so should be interesting.
That's cool.
It was pretty neat. We came back last Sunday. While we were gone, the Cheneys, who we've referred to before, living next door, feeding the cats. Because they're awesome like that, and because anything more than 4 days, we can't just, like, throw water at the cat and leave.
Yeah, right.
So, Kirk's doing that. Kirk usually does that. It's awesome. Cats used to dislike him. Now they kind of like him okay, because they've gotten used to it. One time he stepped on Twiglet's tail, and Twiglet hated him for, like, a year or two afterward.
Oh, wow.
But he's better now. Which is funny, because I've stepped on Twiglet's tail plenty of times, and he's fine with me. But anyway, so I come home, I walk in the door, or I open the door. It's late afternoon on Sunday. Trish is outside checking the mail, and I go, holy fuck. And she doesn't say anything, and I say, holy fuck. And she doesn't, and I say, Trish. She says, what? I say, holy fuck. She's like, huh? And I was like, never mind. And I walk in. She comes in, she says, oh my god! And I was like, hey, that's what I was saying. So... while we were gone, Kirk cleaned our house. Now, that should sound like a big deal by itself.
Yeah, anybody would think that was
awesome.
But
there are two points to add to this to really understand that the scope of this is a larger thing than you realized. Two factors. The first I will go into is how dirty our house was. Our house looked like an episode of Hoarders. Not because we are hoarders, but because we have no children, people generally don't come visit us at the house, and we are too lazy to deal with shit. So laundry is a big pile that sits on a couch in the living room, and, you know, boxes from Amazon just pile up until there is a mountain of them, things like that. This kind of stuff. So it was, you know, there weren't rooms, there were paths to get to chairs and stuff like that. So it was really bad. Kirk cleaned. He didn't clean the whole house. He cleaned about half the house. He cleaned the living room and the family room, which are the two biggest rooms in the house. They now have open floor. He rearranged the furniture into exciting new patterns. He built us a shoe rack. He built us a coat rack that's attached to the wall. He put up pictures. He took back all our empties and, using about half the money, he said, bought two bookcases, built them, and set them up in the family room because we didn't have enough bookcases for our books. It's insane. He found remotes to things we don't own anymore. He found stuff I forgot I had. The cats are still stunned that you saw earlier. They just kind of go out to the middle of the floor, look around, amazed at all this real estate, and just flop down because they can. I myself have done that. It's insane. Now, here's the thing with this story. People hear this story, and they're like, how something? How wonderful or how creepy and terrible? And I'm like, exactly. One guy today, he's like, you could either really love that or you could really be bothered by that. And I said, and we loved it, and we do love it, but we were keenly aware of how close it could be to not loving it.
Yeah, yeah.
Kirk has now seen and handled things and information that no one in the world except me and possibly my wife were ever meant to see, know, or handle.
Right, right.
Our relationship, by default, is now much more intimate. It occurred to me the very next day, I was like, Kirk must really think we're close friends. Because this was a dangerous game to play. And it paid off for him, but it wouldn't necessarily. And apparently, I found out, Marcia, his wife, didn't know about it until basically the day before, because he was too worried about how we would react.
Oh, yeah.
I pressed him on it. I said, seriously, ballpark, how long did it take? And he said, probably 20 to 27 hours.
Mm.
Wow. And it looks it. It's insane. But I think we're going to work with it. I think we're going to keep it clean, and we're going to work on cleaning the rest, which we've tried before and failed. The big thing was it always seems so insurmountable. Mm-hmm. Insurmountable. Mm-hmm. Because there's so much.
Yeah.
He's done the big part now. And so I'm like, okay, first we're going to start by trying to live our lives the normal way we have while not messing it up anymore. Then we will worry about cleaning the rest. But let's start with if we can maintain.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of things missing. He didn't throw them out. I'm confident of this. But he had to put stuff someplace. So there's a lot of things I haven't found where they are yet. But every time I say to her, I'm like, oh, we can't find this or whatever. She's like, okay. She's like, totally worth it, though. I'm like, yes, totally worth it. It's worth, even if we never find the things again, it's totally worth it. But yeah, there is stuff that's right. He also found a lot of money.
Oh.
Which he did not take.
That's good.
And he found a lot of gift cards, some of which still had balances on them. I'm still trying to figure out how to repay him. I'm thinking of giving him some of the gift cards. I don't know. It's just been amazing. It's insane. He cleaned our house. Like, apropos of nothing. A few years ago, he and his wife cleaned our kitchen while we were gone one time. And that was a pretty big project itself. And that was very sweet. But, I mean, that was washing dishes, throwing away trash. Like, this was everything. Like, he cleaned our house. It might be the episode title. He cleaned our house, people. This is insane.
Yeah.
But it's a good insane.
Yep.
And yeah, William was admiring a picture of me and Trish and Trish's family up on the wall. Very large picture.
Very nice
picture. I didn't notice till the day after we got back that it was up there. And it's like, it's hard to miss, but I managed to. Yeah. The clock, remember that clock?
Mm-hmm.
Actually works again. And in fact, scared the crap out of me because the chime went off. I found where the batteries for the chime are and I took them out. But the clock actually works again. Yeah, that used to be there for Guy's Feast all the time. And it's been hanging there. It's just been dead.
Yeah.
He put batteries in it. There's several lamps. That lamp, you know, that was the lamp that sat between us.
Oh, yeah.
And it didn't work.
Oh.
I don't know what he did. It works again now.
Oh.
There's a standing lamp that we had accidentally basically broken a light bulb in.
Mm-hmm.
And we always were like, you know, we can get it out and it'll still work once we get all the broken glass and everything out. But the big thing was getting to it because it was so far in the mess or whatever. He got that, he put it in a new place, and he set it all up. Because I was like, I'll have to clean the glass. And I was like, wait, I just on a hunch, I turned the thing, lit up. He did everything. It's insane. It's really crazy. He cleaned our house. So that was the biggest thing that happened. I've been reading a lot. I read a lot on the trip.
Oh, good.
I have now gone through 2 books in Lev Grossman's Magician Trilogy. I have now come to the point where I very much like them. I'm having a little hard time because the second book, near the end of the second book, spoilers, there is a pretty horrific rape scene, and we've discussed this. And here's the deal. I'm not going to say it was gratuitous. It certainly was not. It was very apropos of the moment. But what I feel happened is that it's a limitation of Lev Grossman's ability. Lev Grossman made this character who, to be fair, as much as I like this character, spent most of the series so far going through battered woman tropes that kind of annoyed me. Mm. But we came to a situation that, due to various fantastic elements, was essentially supposed to be the most horrific experience she could go through, and this is what he came up with. And I get that. There's a lot of male authors that is the most horrific thing they can think, but I'm like, but you could have done better. It didn't have to be that.
Yeah.
And it was not fun to read, but it's not. It didn't stop me, and I'm going to read the next book, and I still say I really like the series. But it did disconcert me that that was true, because nowadays it takes very little of that kind of stuff for me to be like, I'm done.
Mm.
This one did not. And I can't even tell you entirely what I really like about this. But, it's very problematic in terms of gender issues throughout. But I feel like it's honest about it. The main protagonist, from whom we mostly get our focus, is a young man and has a lot of faults, including a lot of chauvinistic faults, of being a young man, but I feel like the author is not glamorizing that. I feel like the author's pretty upfront about that. And that's the least of his problems. It's sort of a really good insight into all the crap that happens when you're a young adult, but filtered through the fact that it's this big, epic, world-hopping fantasy thing. And also, it has very strong ties to an analog of Narnia, which was a huge book series for me when I was younger, and this analog is a huge book series for this character, and so there's ties with that. I don't know. It's the first one was a big emotional roller coaster for me, loving it, hating it, loving it, but being really hard to read. That kind of, in various places. By now, I'm like, no, I like this series a lot. But I'm playing around with reading a book in a series and then reading a book in a different series. So at the moment, I'm not reading the next one. But I will be. I've already purchased it on the Kindle, and I will read it. Still playing Amalur in video games, so nothing much to say there. I think that's it. We only got a little bit, so draw something out of the hat while I eat more food. Do you like how much I eat on the podcast? I love that William gets to come here every week and just watch me eat. Do you want some turkey?
No.
It's not chicken.
I finished a novel since you...
No way!
Talked. Yeah.
What? What novel?
The Historian by... I can never remember the woman's name who wrote it.
How long ago was it written?
It's probably a 10-year-old novel, maybe.
You finished a modern novel?
Yeah, can you believe that?
What the fuck is going on with you?
Probably the only recent novel I've ever read was American Gods.
And that was a while ago.
That was some time ago, and also that's not a very long novel.
A friend and coworker actually just finished American Gods.
It's not very long. In fact, when I got this novel, and it's like 641 pages or something. Okay. I've never read anything like that before. I mean, you know, I've read a lot of science fiction. I read American Gods.
Yeah.
I went and I looked. I said, what's the largest novel that I ever read from Asimov? And most of the novels in his Robot Empire, Foundation, all that. Yeah. I've read all of those, and they're not very big. The longest one was, he actually wrote a pretty long one when he wrote a prequel to the Foundation series, and it's not anywhere. I mean, it's like 400 pages in a small format book.
Yeah.
So
biggest I think I ever read was James Clavell's Shogun, which is 1,210 pages.
Okay, well, when I went to the library to get this book on the recommendation of a friend, former listener, maybe she still listens, I don't know. I realized this is the first time I've ever read anything like this. You know what I mean? It's relatively new. It's thick. It's long. It's like, you know, one of those hardbacks with the plastic dust cover stuff. It's like, I've never picked up anything and read anything like this. You know, I never read Harry Potter or anything. Some of those are pretty thick novels or whatever. And I thought, this is sort of a first. Sat down to read it, and it was pretty good. I liked it quite a bit. The story is supposed to be.
Now, I know we only have two gears here, which is take 30 minutes or stop after 15 seconds. But if you can find it in between there, there's just a few minutes. We do only have about 10 minutes.
Well, I don't really need to talk about it. I just
say, damn it! I knew we were going to get one of those two gears. If I'd let you go, it would have gone an hour
it's
and a half.
The historian, and I forget who the author is, which is stupid. I know you should always remember who the author is, but I forget her name.
But you liked it? Could this be a start of you actually reading novels?
No.
Oh.
The experience of reading a novel like that was not pleasant. But the novel itself
you
was
liked okay. The novel, but you realized that kind of media.
Yeah, there's a reason I don't do it because it's not really my thing. But I did enjoy it for for the time I spent with it. It was nice. Mark McKibben asks,
"All right, number one.
If you are what you eat, does that mean we're all getting dumber because we don't eat intelligent beings?
That's why I eat octopus.
They're smart.
They are very smart. Actually, I don't eat them anymore because they're smart enough that it freaks Trish out about eating them, so I don't do it anymore.
Does that mean we're all getting dumber because we don't eat intelligent beings?
That's not why we're getting dumber.
Nope. That has nothing to do with it. And you know, of course that expression we all know means that if you eat things that are bad for you or garbage, you know, that's what your body is going
to
become.
The building blocks.
Yeah.
Are there. This brings up an interesting thing.
It's not like if you're a cannibal and you eat people that you become like those people. Although I think there have been stories there have been stories written around that concept.
Oh, yeah. You ingest them and become them. There's a lot of sayings like this that have been coming up lately that bother me. I'm still very bothered by the exception that proves the rule. Sometimes I feel like I understand that one, and other times I'm like, no.
I agree on that one.
But every once in a while, it feels like it makes sense. Because in my mind, I'm like, this exception, notice how much it stands out? That's because, you know, that's how I sort of interpret it.
Right.
But mostly it's like, this is not like the way I said. So that proves that things are like the way I said.
Well, but sometimes it might be just that someone's using it wrong. Yeah. And you never can tell.
But the one that bugs me, because it was a joke that my niece was making to her mom the other day. And I've heard this one before. This is a classic hardcore workout one, I believe, which is pain is weakness leaving the body.
Yeah, I've heard that one.
And I've heard that before, and I'm like, yeah, whatever, you know, master your ass, get to the mags, blast your quads, whatever. But I stopped and thought, and I was like, not only is that not true, that's like the opposite of true. Generally speaking, not always, but generally speaking, pain is weakness entering your body. It could be considered leaving the body if you consider, like, your life force weak. It really hurt as you die. And, I mean, I understand that, believe me, I understand the idea that you work out and you work those muscles and the muscles are sore the next day. That is a specific instance and sort of the only one where it might roughly apply. In almost every other circumstance, pain is an indication of injury, which either temporarily or permanently is going to make you weaker. So pain is weakness introducing itself. Almost exactly. I mean, that's pretty much what pain is. Pain is weakness saying, hi, I'm here now. This is a terrible one. I've been catching again a few could care lesses. Oh, I hate those so much. I hate could care less so much. David Mitchell did a bit on it.
You know, another piece of conventional wisdom that I recently had a conversation with someone to challenge, because this is starting to really kind of bother me that this is out there. Because on one hand, it's a shorthand way for people to talk about this phenomenon. But on the other hand, there seems to be a dangerous misconceptions that come from it. And that is to say that this person acts completely different online as compared to in real life.
Yeah.
Because there's no such thing as online versus real life. Online is real life.
Well, and it's on par with people talking about how they're a different personality when they're drunk. I sort of get that. But it's still you. There's inhibition issues and judgment issues. Yeah. But well, you don't... If you're racist when you're drunk, you're racist when you're sober. You just don't talk about it as much.
But I mean, when if you challenge the idea, it's even interesting how people talk about it. Like they'll say, oh, but see, this person, when they're online, they're like right up in people's faces and yelling at them, calling them names, and they never do that when they're not online. They're not up in anyone's face online either.
No.
They're, the face of the other person is not there. That's part of the point.
Yeah.
And the reason I think it's important. I mean, sure, as a shorthand, you can talk about the online environment and offline environment. That's fine.
And I make a big point of explaining to people that the success of a relationship and how well you get along with somebody offline and the success of a relationship and how well you get along with them online appears to have no correlation whatsoever. I have witnessed this firsthand myself. People that I had beautiful, wonderful, intimate relationships with online, and in person we couldn't stand each other. And the opposite. People I was very close to, and then circumstances had it such that we were communicating mostly online, and it was a mess.
Okay. And that's fair.
And I'm not saying it's always different either. Sometimes it totally matches up. Right. I warn people that there is not a correlation there.
Right. And that's fair. But to reify the online world like you are. Another problem is when people paint this picture like this person was a perfectly nice and reasonable person, and they're mean online, as if that mean
the
part
internet
of
made them mean.
Yeah, like that mean part of them was out in cyberspace and they ran into it and discovered it there.
Or in any form just, to try and make them think of them as like two different people.
Yeah. And that's the reason that's dangerous is because it's first of all, it's just not accurate. There's just no scientific basis for what you're saying, but it also prevents people from dealing.
All it's saying is people act different. Some people act differently in a different environment,
yes.
Which is true everywhere.
That's
you
right.
know what? I'm a totally different person in the Amazonian rainforest.
Well,
you know why? Because I'm hot as fuck and everything wants to kill me.
But see, this is an important point you're making.
No, I'm making a joke, but I'm serious too.
No, I get it, but
absolutely.
But that's an important point you're making, because if people don't own this thing that they are when they're online and realize this is a part of who you are. This isn't something that magically appears when you get online. This is a part of who you are. Then there's a lot of issues that you're not going to deal with or face. Because one thing I said was that nobody goes into cyberspace with anything that they didn't already have with them. And in a way, people don't ever really act different in cyberspace than they act in the real world. And that's two reasons. One, because there is no cyberspace. It's all the real world.
Yeah.
And the second thing is, if someone seems to be behaving more aggressively online than they do otherwise, then you're probably not paying attention. This person's probably very passive aggressive all the time, and you either don't notice it or you've gotten used to it or something else.
One of only two great PSAs ever I saw was one about basically online bullying, and it is this young woman coming up during a school assembly, and she opens up a piece of paper and she starts talking terrible things about this girl named Becky or something who's in the middle of the room, and they're like, if you wouldn't say it to their face, don't say it online. Oh, but that reminds me, and I do have to say in the last minutes here, I have to tell you about one other thing about my trip. I saw the coolest PSA ever. I'm in Seattle. I'm browsing through channels, and I stop on this one, and it's a group of, let's say, millennials hanging out on somebody's patio porch, and they're just kind of hanging, And one guy who's standing there who has the white man afro kind of thing going and wearing a flannel or something. And he's standing there in front of a grill, like a propane-powered grill. And he's hitting the ignition button, and it's going click, click, but nothing's happening. And he's staring at it. And he holds up in his other hand a raw T-bone steak, looks at it, puts it back down on the grill, hits the button some more, and it comes up on the screen. This is in Washington, remember? Grilling while high is now legal. And then his friends come over and they look and they see there's no propane tank attached. And it says, driving to the store to get the propane you forgot is not. Don't drive high. And I was like, oh my god, that is all true. I'm living in a world where we need this PSA now. This is amazing. And it cracked me up because I had no idea what the fuck was going on.
You know, I do have to say, the thing you said before about if you won't say it to their face, don't say it online.
Yeah.
The reason that is so important is because this addresses the very thing that concerns me. The more we insist that there's some kind of actual veil between the real world and the cyber world, we're going to think that I'm just insulting the person online. That doesn't mean anything.
It's the dehumanizing thing. It's constantly the dehumanizing thing. People think that other people online are not real people.
Well, that's right. Or that what I'm going to do online isn't going to have an effect because it's not real.
Yes. And they will
but
take it the same
But it is
way.
Real. Oh my God. It's just like if you were to saying it to their face. That's the point.
And if you were an early adopter to the information superhighway, you would have lots of first-hand experiences of this. I had a friend who, in the very early days of this stuff, back on a green screen mud, or on a dump terminal, on a multi-user dungeon, was raped. And all that means is guys were typing about doing things to her, and she could have logged off at any time, but she was so stunned,
They
just kept typing. And it was a very real violation.
No, sure.
It was horrific. Despite, you know, it was just words. She could have just turned off the screen. Like, obviously, no one was actually touching her. Nobody even knew her real name. These were, like, character names. It was still hugely traumatizing to her.
That's right.
Also, in something a little less depressing, I grew up online. And I know people nowadays always say that. But no, I started online on bulletin board systems when I was in, like, 7th grade. And I loved it because I was so much cooler online. I was way more eloquent. People, like grown-ups, kept talking about how mature I was. I would flirt with people in their 20s and 30s because I was that mature and cool and suave. Comparatively, I should specify, compared to my junior high horribleness, I was way cooler. Over the course of several years, going through high school, I sort of grew up, and what basically happened and what I eventually realized was that eventually that online version of me was just me.
Yep.
And in day-to-day, that's what I became.
That's right, exactly.
And that's because they were the same person.
That's right.
It was just a training wheels area where I could feel a little bit more comfort because nobody was looking at me.
Yeah.
I could take the time to pick my words.
That's right.
And things like that. But, I mean, it was absolutely still a human experience in the real world.
But, I mean, if people keep insisting, I mean, people think that words don't matter. Like, and not, I don't just mean bullying. I mean, thinking in terms of, oh, this person's completely different online than in the real world. Just thinking that is psychologically setting you up to put this, to think that there's a real tangible veil between the outside world and the cyber world. And there isn't one.
And I still catch myself.
And that's dangerous to think that way.
I have online friends who I've only ever known online. In some cases, I don't know anything about their real world life, but we've known each other for years. We chat, we hang out, stuff like that. Every once in a while, I catch myself stopping and going like, wait, they're a real person. Based on stuff they do. Like, they're being really annoying, or they're being different than usual, and at first I'm just like, I honestly, on a certain level, have this reaction like, why is the game's AI suddenly behaving differently? Obviously not consciously.
No, right,
I'm
not right,
an
right.
Idiot.
Right, right, right.
But there are times where I'm like, this is weird or whatever. Or stuff where somebody's being an asshole to me and I'm like, don't they remember I'm a real person? And I'm like, wait, so are they.
Yeah.
Maybe some shit's going down
with them. Yeah, yeah, right. Right.
And honestly, constantly many times too where I see people who are friends but they do something stupid or whatever, and I'm like, That's because they're forgetting I'm a real person. I can tell that. And it's not bad enough to, like, end our relationship or whatever. But there are times where I'm like, I don't understand their behavior unless I consider the fact that they forget I'm a person. Because I feel like they wouldn't treat people like that face to face.
Yeah, there's just a lot of interesting psychological things that happen because of this computer-mediated interaction. Yeah.
We're over time, and I need to stretch out and lay on the living room floor and be amazed by it. You should write the hat, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. We always need more comments and questions, really. You should also go to themagicaltalkinghat.com and tell us what you're like online and what you eat so we know what you are, and also what you eat online. I'm going to bed soon. And like us on Facebook, because that's very edifying for me. And come back next week, because we'll do it again. And also, tell us any acoustical differences you noticed, because we're in a whole new position and everything, so I'm very curious how it sounds. So go to themagicaltalkinghat.com and tell us about that. And you can see the huge conversation, too big for me to even read, between Jazz and William last week, because that was fun. So anyway, have a good night. My house might actually be cleaner than yours now, so suck on that.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.